This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for more than a decade, Chicago police have been seizing more guns and arresting more people for possessing those guns. Here's a representative comment from David Brown, who until last month was superintendent of the Chicago Police Department. This is from a news conference last summer. He said in the first half of the year, police had confiscated thousands of guns and made thousands of gun arrests.
And I can't say this enough. I'll keep repeating it. Each gun recovered, regardless of how, is a potential life saved. And each gun recovered is a result of dangerous work done by our police officers who serve with courage each and every day.
All right, what did you say there? Each gun recovered, regardless of how, is a potential life saved. But despite what Brown frames as progress, shootings increased during this time frame. And the gun arrests that were made were predominantly for possession of the weapon, not for actually using it to shoot someone. All this is the subject of a series of articles from the nonprofit news site The Marshall Project, which focuses on our criminal justice system. One story examines the enforcement practices and racial disparities in gun possession arrests in Chicago and elsewhere, while another looks at the historical context of Chicago's strict gun laws and their implications for true public safety. Joining me now are the reporters behind these stories. Lakedra Chavis is based in Chicago for the Marshall Projects. She's previously joined us to talk about her reporting on the survivors of gun violence. Lakedra, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Also with us is Jeff Hing, a data reporter at the Marshall Project. He's previously worked for the Chicago Tribune and is today based in Arizona. Jeff, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jeff, I'm going to begin with you. What prompted this investigation?
I would say that Lakedra could probably speak to that a bit better than I could. But just from a data standpoint, I wanted to use arrest records, arrest reports, data about the victimization of about people who are victims of gun violence to really get a clear picture of what it looked like to enforce gun laws in Chicago, what impact that had on violence, and how that fit into the bigger national conversation about community safety.
Yeah, yeah. Challenging that conventional wisdom, I guess. Lakedra, let me put that question to you then. Same question. What prompted you to start looking into this?
Yeah, well, Brian, I think the last time I was on the show, it was in 2021, which was closer to the onset of the pandemic. And I was here in Chicago covering sort of community level, street level gun violence. And what I noticed at the time is that while shootings were increasing here in Chicago and certainly around the country, the Chicago Police Department were doing a lot of arrests for illegal gun possession, which oftentimes in Illinois has a confusing name, unlawful use of a weapon, but it's a possession charge. And I just didn't understand why in a time where there was so much tragedy happening that the sort of criminal legal response was to ramp up on possession while most shootings, as they do now and as they have in the past, remain unsolved.
So what was the big finding? And without getting into too many numbers, because this is radio and numbers just don't work too well on the radio, but what was the big finding about, you know, what Chicago police are doing, or the big disconnect, I guess, that was the focus of your reporting?
Yeah, so the main finding was that, you know, in the past sort of 12 years or so, or since 2010, the majority of arrests that CPD, the Chicago Police Department, has made has been for illegal gun possession. And this has ramped up so much that, you know, as of last year, almost 80% of the arrests that the police make that involve a gun have illegal gun possession as the most severe charge. We found that the majority of people arrested are Black men in their 20s and 30s, and that it's not as clear cut as maybe the public might assume. So in Illinois, what you need to be a legal gun owner is to have your firearm owner's identification card, your FOID card, and your concealed carry license. And oftentimes we found that people had their FOID card, that didn't have their CCL, so they can still be charged for illegal gun possession, or sometimes they didn't have either licenses. And we found that these arrests, even if the cases were eventually dismissed, oftentimes people lost their job because they were stuck in jail, they had trouble finding housing afterward, or they had to pay thousands of fees because their car was impounded, or to hire private attorneys to help them with their case.
And I want to pick up on something you said there. We need to take a break here, so we're going to do that, and we'll come back. But I want to pick up on, you made the point that these arrests are for possession of the weapon, not for actually using the weapon. Even though the law is called unlawful use of a weapon, it's really just possessing the weapon because you didn't have the right paperwork, or maybe you weren't possessing it in the legal, legal way, which is in a case, inaccessible if it's in a vehicle, for example. But what is not being arrested as much are people actually shooting other people with these weapons. So we're going to talk more about that disconnect when we come back. We're talking about a new series of reports in the Marshall Project, the nonprofit news site that focuses on criminal justice. We're talking with the reporters behind that story, Lakedra Chavis and Jeff Hing. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking for the rest of our program today about a series of reports in The Marshall Project, the nonprofit news site that focuses on our criminal justice system. One of those reports was called The War on Gun Violence Has Failed and Black Men Are Paying the Price. In Chicago and elsewhere, gun possession arrests are rising as shootings go unsolved. We're talking with the reporters behind that story. They are Lakedra Chavis, who is based in Chicago for the Marshall Project, and Jeff Hing, who is a data reporter at the Marshall Project and is based in Arizona. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. If you have a question about what we're talking about or a comment on it, we'd love to hear your perspective. Again, that's 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. So, Jeff, can you talk a little bit more about how you investigate, how you crunch these numbers, how you found this sort of the disconnect between the increasing number of gun possession arrests and the declining percentage of shooting victims where someone was arrested in their case?
Sure. So we started. And I want to point out that I think that this is an observation that other researchers, perhaps other journalists have, and certainly people living in Chicago and Illinois have noticed. And we just wanted to take a really close and rigorous look at these dynamics. So we filed public records requests for records of arrests involving weapons, and I wrote some code to filter those to ones where the charge was for gun possession, and more specifically ones where gun possession was the most serious charge. So it wasn't like there was also a shooting and the person responsible for the shooting also was carrying their gun illegally. And similarly, we filed public records requests for records of both fatal and non-fatal shootings of the victims of those shootings, and looked as well as the status of those investigations and the any arrests that could be related by various identifiers in the data with the cases of those shooting victims, in order to calculate a percentage of shooting victims' cases where there was either because of the way the police had coded the status or because there was a related arrest, there was some substantial progress towards solving the case.
Yeah, and one of the lines that jumped out at me from the story was, since 2010, records show that police have failed to make an arrest in more than 8 in 10 shootings. Another way to look at that is that they're only making an arrest, they're only, quote-unquote, solving the case 20% of the time. Lakedra, can you say more about that and what effect you see from your reporting that that has on the communities where shootings are taking place?
Yeah. Well, it's really staggering, right, that out of the more than 30,000 shootings that have happened in Chicago since 2010, the likelihood of an arrest being made is dismal. And when you talk to people who are living in parts of neighborhoods here in the city that experience a heightened level of gun violence, there is this sense, especially among young people that I speak to, that you can literally just get away with murder, right? And these are often young people who have experienced shootings, so they're shooting survivors, and they know that the likelihood that they'll see a sort of formal sense of justice is just very small. And when I speak to Black mothers in Chicago who have lost children to gun violence, even mothers who have been lucky enough to see a conviction and an arrest in their own child's case, they are horrified that for so many families, there will not be an arrest. And oftentimes there is a sense that people know who did do the shooting. So you have people walking around who have caused harm, and the system, at least the way we think the system should respond, is not actually responding to these issues.
Yeah, this puts me in mind of a book came out a few years ago called Ghettocide by Jill Leovi. This was about murder and gun violence in Los Angeles. But one of her big ideas there was that because police solve so few murders, especially in predominantly Black communities, they are failing to deliver justice for people who live there. And because of that, people take the law into their own hands. I wonder if, I mean, is that the sort of thing you're describing in Chicago as well, where people feel like it's almost like a frontier, you know, Old West environment? Well, if the law is not going to bring me justice, maybe I have to protect myself and seek justice for my family.
I think that's certainly the perspective that some and experiences that some people have, certainly not everyone, but, you know, I've talked to mothers here in Chicago, but in also Philadelphia. And one of the things that surprised me was how common that sentiment is where, you know, someone's child has been murdered, you know, through a shooting, and the sort of the response that they get either from a family member or a friend is to basically enact some form of street justice, right? Because the likelihood, as you said, of a shooting being solved is very dim. But then you see how that can create just sort of cycles of problems where there's this systemic failure and then people sort of trying to sort of address that in their own way. But then that quickly spirals and causes even more harm.
And if I can jump in,
please do.
I also want to sort of take a step back and just point out that while I do think there are particularly acute reasons why people who live in communities or who have themselves been victims of violence may look towards guns as a way of protecting their safety, from the folks that Lakedra and I talk to, their reasons and the language they use to describe carrying guns, either with or without the required licenses in Illinois, are really similar to, I think, the reasons you hear people talking about carrying guns, especially around personal safety, anywhere in Illinois and anywhere across the US. The sort of looking to guns as a way of taking one's personal safety into their own hands, I think is remarkably consistent. And so just as, even as the communities that Lakedra was talking about are uniquely and acutely impacted by gun violence, I think a lot of the motivations for gun ownership are really similar, both inside and outside of Chicago and inside and outside of Illinois.
Yeah, a more universal than maybe even gun rights supporters who are not in Black communities might appreciate that feeling is what I hear you saying there. You know, I want to come back to that clip from former Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown, who had that line, "Each gun recovered, regardless of how, is a potential life saved." And that reminded me of an interview that we just had last week with Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. I want to play a short clip from that. We were talking about Illinois' new law ending the sale of assault weapons, and I shared with him the concerns of a Black gun rights activist who had felt that activist had said he felt like the law would be used to target people of color. Here's what the Attorney General had to say to that.
Hopefully so, because the people of color currently bear the brunt of the harm that's being done by these types of weapons. And so to the extent that we have a better enforcement in Cook County, where a disproportionate amount of the gun violence is taking place in neighborhoods populated predominantly by people of color, certainly we want a law that's aimed at preserving public safety to have that effect of keeping people safe.
Lakhidra, you did another story as part of your reporting project here that looked at the history of Chicago and its gun laws and how that is inextricably linked to race. What did you think of what the Attorney General had to say in the context of this new law that Illinois has?
Well, I thought what Attorney General Komai Raul shared was quite interesting for several reasons. So this idea that the law isn't explicitly racist or saying that the enforcement outcome should be a certain way, but the reality of who is being charged, who is being arrested, skewing towards Black communities, is something that we found in this reporting that goes all the way back to like 60 years ago when Illinois passed its firearm owner's identification card. At the time, this law was not something that when you read the text is sort of explicitly saying go after Black communities, but that was certainly the sort of outer discourse around having that law passed, in addition to, I think, sort of universal concerns about public safety and people wanting to feel safe in their communities, the sort of thing that Jeff was getting at earlier. But also, it's my understanding that the assault weapons ban was passed to address a different type of gun violence, in part at least. And that, you know, when Governor Pritzker signed this into law, he really evoked the sort of major mass shootings that really captivate the public's attention. So the Highland Park shooting that happened just last summer, Uvalde and Sandy Hook. So I think what Attorney General Raul said is very, very interesting. And this is, of course, all under the sort of assumption that it is going to address, again, public safety, the number of shootings. But what we found in our own reporting is that shootings go up and they go down, even with these laws in place. So I think that there sort of needs to be a bit more nuance around these conversations about guns and certainly the way that we try to address them.
Do you or did any of the people you spoke with for this story, I mean, what sort of changes might make a more equitable and effective approach to gun enforcement in Chicago?
Yeah, well, when we spoke to researchers, including researchers who, you know, thought it was important to address illegal gun possession, you know, they felt like there is a way to address this issue without leading to issues like stop and frisk or sort of, you know, casting this very wide net over a community that ends up criminalizing people who otherwise would not have had an experience with the legal system. And one of the ways that research has shown this can be effective, although the research sort of has its limitations, is when police are able to sort of hyper-focus on very specific parts of a neighborhood or city that has a heightened level of violence, gun violence in this case, that it can lead to reductions. There just needs to be sort of more research over longer periods of time to really spell that out.
And Jeff,
go ahead.
I think that law enforcement agencies in Chicago and elsewhere could do a better job of making it clear what their strategy is to the community, how they're gauging the efficacy of those strategies, and to convey a sense that that the laws are being enforced fairly for all people who are breaking the laws. And what we're seeing in the disparities that we found in our reporting is not just a disparity in enforcement. And I think it's worth pointing out a recent article, I think from last week, that journalists at Block Club Chicago and Injustice Watch published looking at traffic stops, which is sort of the mechanism by which the gun arrests that we reported on have really ramped up in recent years. And I think it's also important to look at the consequences of bringing more people into contact with the criminal legal system when the sort of expressed goal is increased public safety.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff Hing and Lakedra Chavis, I want to thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show to share your reporting with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sure. The article is, the lead article is called "The War on Gun Violence Has Failed and Black Men Are Paying the Price." It was published by the Marshall Project. I want to mention that we love hearing what you think about what we talk about on our program, whether it was today's show or any time in the recent past. If you like it or you don't like it, if you think we maybe got something factually wrong or for whatever reason, let us know what you think. Leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. That's anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121. We will be sharing some of your responses on air from time to time. You can also find that number, our email address, and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our podcast or just look us up on your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple, Spotify. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about a new police training requirement on innocence in Illinois. The Innocence Project and related organizations will be training new police officers on wrongful convictions. That's part of their mandatory training. Plus, we'll hear from an Illinois State University professor who is a national expert on school violence. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.